This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, president, and for more than 20 years, KPP has been helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. It is February 23rd, 2017. And, of course, we're here all about to talk about investing and developing well-rounded skills and attitudes towards managing money. We do that every day. You know, everybody's listening to the show is very interested about and motivated about making more money, about investing properly and doing a good job and growing their income. So am I. I am. So this is what the show is about, trying to everybody to learn more, including myself. It seems like I'm always learning more every day. Now, today, weak results haven't stopped another pack of Wall Street pros from predicting 2017 to be a breakthrough year. That's one of our talking points. It amazes me how often the experts are wrong. And that's one of the talking points today. Well, how'd they do in 2016? You'll be amazed at the statistics, how poorly they do. That's why I think you can do better. The average person can do better. They don't think experts are always right. Many times are wrong. Many times. Matter of fact, in the book I wrote, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, what's one of the things I quoted in there, I'm quoting myself. Experts are always wrong. They're always wrong. Anyways, much of the conversation here on Invest Talk is about making better investing decisions, as you know. Yesterday, I talked a little bit about putting a value on a company and some of the indicators of its worth, like the price-to-earnings ratio. Everybody knows about that. But there's other factors as well, other kind of relationships. But you need to be rational, calm. And you really need to put that value on before you buy it. I find a lot of people calling me, I bought this stock and it gone down. What do I do? Well, why did you buy it? Did things change? Is there something different? Just because the stock goes down doesn't mean it was wrong that you bought it. You know, you can accept the fact that it's gone down, that and that part of your decisions were wrong. You bought it and it went down. Okay, but that doesn't mean long term that was a wrong decision. Doesn't mean that. Why did you buy it? What did you expect from it? What was your analysis of it? Was that an incorrect analysis? Those are the kinds of things. Stay calm. You know, too many people buy the story of a stock. We don't, that's amateurs, guys. We don't do that. We don't buy story stocks. We don't buy the story. Stories speak to your emotional nature. Human beings are emotional creatures. The story speaks to that, but that's not how you invest. Okay? And I know you don't want to grasp the hard work of analyzing balance sheets and industry dynamics and leadership qualities. All that's hard. I know you don't want to do it, but you have to do it. And that's why, one of the reasons why amateurs gravitate to growth stocks, by the way. They want to be highly speculative. They want the growth stock. They want the excitement. But that's not how you're going to be successful long term. For instance, you know, Amazon, Tesla, you know, those are two very, very good companies, different dynamics. Both companies are innovative, and investors are buying both of them or bought both of them aggressively early on based on great potential. But look at the difference of those two companies. Amazon leveraged technology to grow an e-commerce platform that dominates today. They use technology better than anyone else. They drove down efficiency and did so with small but sustainable margins, profit margins. Early on, they plowed any profits back into their business, into research and development. And of course, that made their profitability look pretty darn poor for years and years and years. But all you do is, what were they doing with the money they were making? What were they doing? Plowing it back into the company. Now let's talk about Tesla. Also a very innovative company, changing the car industry completely. It's pushed that car industry into a different direction completely. However, their financial success has been much worse. While they're pumping out exciting products, they're doing so at steep losses. They're not improving their margins, they're getting worse. They continue to burn cash pretty at really alarming rates. And they have, of course, blame it on R&D, research and development spending. But they still have negative cash flow figures despite investing in themselves. Unlike Amazon, you could see that the cash flow was getting better and better and better. That's not the bottom line. Tesla is not. Now, Tesla has the potential to be, I think it's going to be, I really believe it's going to be the next big car company. I believe that. But I believe that it may not do that with the current shareholders, meaning they could easily file bankruptcy, get rid of all the current shareholders, and you lose all your money, and then they come out of bankruptcy and a lean mean machine. Remember what GM did? I could see Tesla doing the same thing. Right now, they're just taking on too much debt. Anyways, I'm probably boring you with those things, aren't I? Anyways, have you been taken in by a stock story? Let's hear your investing experience. And we're ready for your questions, too, right now at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
How are you doing, Steve? My name is Donald, calling from Ontario, California. My question to you is, what happens to your shares if you invest into a company that decides to merge with another company? For instance, the talk and the possibility of Sprint merging with T-Mobile. What would happen to either or shares, and if that were to happen? Thank you. Bye.
If they're merging one company into the other, and therefore getting, like, let's say Sprint disappears, and now the new company is T-Mobile. What will be happening, you'll get T-Mobile shares for your Sprint shares. So let's say T-Mobile has twice the value as Sprint. So you might get one share of T-Mobile for every two shares of Sprint. Very common. That does happen. So there'll be some kind of workout as to how much of the new combined company in shares the old one is worth, and how many shares you will get of the new combined company. That make sense? Look at Bobby in Atlanta. Atlanta, beautiful city. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Steve. Good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
All right. Company ticker symbol is S as a Sam, W as a William, M as a Mary.
Okay. That is Schweitzer Mondit International. Moldu.
Yeah, something like that.
You want to buy it? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I want to buy some.
Okay, let's look and see what it does. Excuse me. It's headquartered in Georgia, manufactures cigarette paper and reconstituted tobacco products for tobacco manufacturers. Okay, so it's in the tobacco industry, $1.2 billion company. It always has made money. It's going to make $3.16 this year, that's down 10 cents or so from last year, and then $3.40 next year. So it's going to make $3.40 a share next year, and it's a $41 stock. Okay, so what kind of PE does that give it? About a 13 PE or so? 14 maybe? 14 PE? The five-year range of the PE is 8 to 17, so it's kind of on the high end. Has a good return on equity of 20% and pays a really nice dividend of 4%. So that's probably why you would buy this, Bobby, is the dividend. The dividend is really attractive because it's not growing very fast. Its growth is kind of erratic. Some years it grows, some years it shrinks. But really, you know, it's been making $3 and something change per share for years. So you don't buy this for the growth. You buy it because it's on sale and you can get it cheap and the dividend's high. Because the dividend has been it's been a long-term dividend payer. It's very steady. It does nothing for me, Bob. I'll tell you that. It doesn't do anything for me. If it fell further, maybe into the low 30s, mid-30s, I might be a little bit different about that because then my dividend might be closer to 5% instead of 4%. But at this point, it's got a little bit too much debt. And it just doesn't attract me, even though it's got good return on equity, 20%. I just think I think I'd wait for the correction before I buy it. That's what I think. Whenever that correction came, well, if it came 6 months or a year from now, I still wait. That's what I would do.
Okay,
Bobby, appreciate the call.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, you buy it for the dividends. You want to get the biggest dividend yield you can, and that means the stock needs to fall because their dividend is very steady. they're going to pay the same dividend because they're making the same money all the time for years and years and years. So your path is that dividend. I wouldn't buy it at this point. And that symbol is SWM, SWM. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Sure, I'm open to your money questions right now, sure. But I want to hear from you. I want to hear any investing stories you have. I want to hear anything you want to talk about when it comes to money. I want to hear it. Are you on track to meet your retirement goals? Are you playing catch up? 888-99-CHART is our number. It's live, listener line, we call it. So we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, Alex from Texas here. I wanted to know what your thoughts on Dish Network were through an ESP program. Look forward to hearing your response on the show. Thanks so much.
Dish Network, let's take a look at that stock. Okay, Dish Network is out of Inglewood, Colorado. Provides direct broadcast satellite service nationwide. Now, if you haven't heard of Dish, you live in a cave somewhere because, you know, everybody knows Dish Network. I'm punching it in different systems. DSSH, there you go. Let's see, they're going to make $2.69 this year. That's down 12% from last year, and then $2.18 next year, and that's going to be down another 8% from this year. Sales have pretty much flat. They're not growing. They're not shrinking. The last three quarters ago was zero. Last quarter it shrank 2%. So the question is, at a $61.91 price, is $2.47 worth it? And the answer is no. No, it's overpriced. No. There would be absolutely no reason to buy this stock in my mind. Okay, because we're approaching what, 25, 30 PE? Now, return on equity is very high, so that's positive. Cash flow is very good. The dividend, though, you know, they don't pay one. They're a $28 billion company. They should be paying a dividend, not selling 10 times book value. There's nothing in this that would tell me, huge debt level, that would want to own it. Meanwhile, the stock has gone from 50 a year ago to 60, almost $62 now. They're saying, well, apparently I'm wrong, right? It's gone up. Well, I'm not wrong. The valuation is way too high. Just because people want to buy this and value it higher doesn't mean it makes sense. No. There's no reason to buy it. Not at this point. Too expensive. Dish. Okay, everybody. The market was up today. Well, I want to say, let me rephrase that. The Dow was up 34 and the S&P was up 1, but the NASDAQ was down 25. So 2 days in a row for a down market on the NASDAQ, yet 10-day up days in a row for the Dow and 10 record days in a row. So you tell me what's going on there. It seems like the market is, you know, it's confused. That's all right. It's confused, but a bullish confusion, not a bearish confusion. Bullish. So we'll see how that goes. We're going to talk about Japan and deflation this hour. I want to talk about everyone is feeling not everybody feels retirement is unattainable. A lot of people are feeling it is attainable. And I have a schedule of what you should be saving based on your age. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. You can always see my portfolio review schedule for offices in Northern California. And you can always see a date for an informal review of Skype and telephone from anywhere. Just go to investtalk.com and click on that portfolio review. Let's talk to Gene in North Carolina. North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, 2 days ago, I think you were talking about mutual fund prospectus.
Yes.
And to look inside. Yeah. I wanted to share what I look in there and get your opinion about it.
Sure.
Yeah, I go directly to the section called financial highlights, which it more or less looks like a table where the with rows and columns, and all the columns are the different years that they're in operation.
Yeah, they're trying to show you what, like, $10,000 would grow to.
Yeah, they show every year what essentially look for the trend of what is going on with the fund year after year, whether their net assets are growing and how much their return is for each year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what I normally what rings alarm bells for me is when a fund, let's say 5 years ago, had over $500 million, and every year people have net redemptions, and it goes to $400 million, $300 million, $200 million, and gets less and less. Then I worry that the fund may close or be merged into something else.
Yeah, it tells you people are taking their money out of it.
Right, even though the total return every year is just fine and maybe just market average, but they have net redemptions.
Yeah.
And also, if the fund goes the other way, if a small cap fund all of a sudden does very well and all of a sudden everyone piles money into it, then all of a sudden that $500 million fund may balloon up to over a billion.
Yeah, that doesn't, though, tell you in and of itself if the fund's doing bad or good as far as returns, but it isn't. Go ahead.
Right. It has a separate column for a total return for each year.
Mm-hmm. And you also got to be careful if you're looking at a small cap fund that it gets more and more money under management, because there's only so many small cap stocks out there and it can't own all of them.
That's what I was mentioning. When a small cap fund balloons up from $500 million every year to maybe over a billion, then all of a sudden the manager, you know, there's not enough small caps for them to invest in, right?
Right, and they start to get out of their expertise and go to the mid caps. So it happens.
Right, right.
They have to.
It's also that chart also is about the only place I can find the yearly turnover rate.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Very good.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Gene. Thanks for the info. Yeah, see, you can learn a lot from those perspectives, but they are small print, and you got to read them. It's not fun. Most people don't like it. I do, but most people don't. We're going to go talk to our friend Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to find out if you knew anything about contributing to both a 401k as well as a IRA or a Roth.
Yes.
Can you do that?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can do it. But if you make too much money, there's a limitation. If you make let's say you make $200,000 or $300,000, $400,000 a year, well, all of a sudden you can't contribute to an IRA. You know, there's rules.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not quite sure of the rules. That's not my expertise. I just know there are rules if you make too much money and now you're going to be restricted. I'm not sure why that makes any sense. Because what if one year you do very, very well, okay? You're self-employed, you do very well. It would make sense to be able to put retirement money, because maybe next year you'll do poorly, you know, or the next 3 years.
Right.
But the government doesn't look at it that way. So there are rules. If you make too much money in a year, that year you can't, you got restrictions. And you got to talk to your accountant.
Even though that you may have not contributed the maximum amount into your 401,
yeah,
there's still
there's rules restrictions on your IRA contribution. I just don't know what they are. They might not even apply to Roth IRAs. May just be regular IRAs. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call.
All right.
Thank
Bye.
You. Yeah, I wish I knew all about that. I just don't. Everybody, remember, I manage money. I did. What I always tell my nieces and nephews when they think I'm smart, I say, okay, I know a little about a lot of things, but I don't know a lot about a few very good things or a few things. I just don't. I so, you know, it's frustrating because I would like to know more about all the accounting stuff, but it changes so often, hard to stay up with it. It just gets frustrating for me. Japan and deflation. We know that Japan has been in deflation for years and years and years and years, since about 1990 or so. Okay, that's when their deflation started to happen. And now the question is, are they finally working their way out of it? There was a real estate bubble in the late 80s and early 90s. That's one of the problems. They had lots of corporate leverage back then, and the government had lots and lots of money. Reminded me of China back then, where they had lots and lots of money, and the government kept pouring money into it, not letting the corporations go under, keeping everything afloat, trying to keep everything as is, and then they got into a big mess of deflation. And, of course, they have structural problems. Age, they don't, haven't liberalized enough their immigration. They're starting to do that. They're starting to deregulate. And they're bringing in more women into labor force. All these things might indicate that they finally will get out of their deflationary cycle and go back to an inflationary cycle, which is something that they want and most countries and most governments want, inflation. Just not out of control inflation. We're at the halfway mark, everybody, on this Thursday Invest Talk. Let's hear your money question right now if we can. 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues next. Steve and Justin are talking very highly about Active 401k. It's a new program that's available right now for Invest Talk listeners. It enables employees to make smart choices in their employer's 401ks. So if you're frustrated by your 401k performance and your limited time to research, Active 401k might be just the solution for you. It ranks your current options within your employer's plan. And then all you do is log in and make the changes. We'll tell you what to buy, what percentages, and what funds. This program is being offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of our Invest Talk listeners. Again, it's called Active 401k. And if you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab and then Active 401k. Now let's continue with our podcast. On our next Invest Talk, notoriously boring dividend investors have reason to bust out a victory dance. What you need to know about dividend investing in 2017. That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk. We hope you can join us.
Justin, Steve, this is Pete from Minnesota. I love your show. Thanks for everything you do. Hey, I have a question about Unilever, UL. I heard you talking on your show on Tuesday that you had gotten out of this position after the recent run-up. I own Unilever. I'm just wondering what you think of the long-term possibilities or if I should get out of that stock. All right, I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks.
Oh, I think the long-term possibilities are very strong for Unilever. I think they're very good. Unilever, everybody, UL is a symbol, UK-based producer of food, detergents, personal care, and it, you know, there was a buyout offer which was refused for Unilever. And the company itself is very good. I mean, it's still, sales are not growing. Matter of fact, they're shrinking slightly, but you got to remember it's a $133 billion company. It's huge, and it pays a 3.7% dividend. And I'm pretty sure with the recovery of Europe, if it ever does, which it will, but you know, when it does and the worldwide growth picks up, Unilever will be right there. And I guarantee that everybody else thinks the same thing, and that's one of the reasons why there was a buyout offer, because you know they're hoping to pick it up on the cheap, and it's really not that cheap. Not now after this bump up. It's just not cheap anymore. At $46.90, when it was in the high 30s, low 40s, it was much more attractive to me, but not now. But if you're a long-term holder and it's a core holding, you have no problems. You just keep it. And as I said, it was two out of the three programs. We have three major programs at KPP Financial, and we kept it in one, and we sold it in the other two the day it popped up when the offer was made. Offers made and refused. Unilever, UL, everybody. Not everyone feels retired. Not everybody feels retirement is unattainable. There was a recent survey. 90% of baby boomers and General X, Gen Xers, feel that their ideal retirement is either somewhat attainable or attainable. 90%. 57% think they're going to have to work longer. Now, the reality is, I don't know if they're this is how they feel. Okay, feel how you feel may not be the reality, though. Because the reality is, anybody 65 years or older, which is a lot of baby boomers right now, only have about $148,000 saved. How are you going to have a great retirement or a good retirement if that's all the money you have? And you're going to live a lot longer in retirement. So even though a majority of baby boomers and Gen Xers feel that their ideal retirement is attainable, I don't think they're being realistic based on the statistics of how much money they have and how much money they're saving. It's not realistic. That's what I think. Because, you know, you can feel that you're going to do great. You can feel, oh, I'm going to have a pleasant retirement. But if you don't take action to ensure that, you're not going to make it. And I think that's where, you know, the survey that they did, I think, was totally missed the boat. Because the survey was very upbeat. And I'm thinking, but that's not reality. Just not reality. So if you think you're going to be a happy retired person, you better have enough money. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. You can't buy groceries with happiness. You need to buy groceries with money. So try to think in those terms. I want you to be happy. Everybody wants to have a happy retirement. I want you to be. And it's very attainable. But it's not, it just doesn't happen. You have to work toward it. I have some new dates for Northern California for individual retirement reviews. In March, I'll be in San Jose on the 15th and the 25th. In San Jose, 15th and 25th. Or if you live out of the range of California, you know, and you still want to meet with me, we can do it via Skype or telephone. And all you have to do is reserve your time. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then portfolio review. That's an email that will come directly to me.
How much time does it take to properly manage a retirement portfolio? Do I need a living trust? How much life insurance should I have? Should beginners start out with individual stocks? And how much of my portfolio should be in dividend-paying stocks? All important questions, and if you're looking for answers to your question, you're welcome to ask them right now. 888-99-CHART is our direct line.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Saeed from Illinois. I was wondering the ticker symbol is RRD. RR Donnelly and Sons. They are down like $18.09, something like that. Is it a good time to get in? They pay good dividend and they're pretty down for the last couple of years. Please give me your feedback. Thank you. I love your show.
Okay, this is what we call a value trap, in my opinion. It's RR Donnelly and Sons, provides printed direct mail, financial printing, print fulfillment, and other print services to various industries. It's going to make 69 cents a share in 2016, because the fiscal year is not over. We haven't got the final quarter number in. And then $1.05 next year. And the stock is selling for $18. What did it do in 2015? It made $4.53. It made $4 to $5 every year prior to 2016. $4 to $5 per share, but in 2016, only 69 cents. So you're thinking, wow, you know, if you look at the PE looking backwards, you're looking at a PE that is like 4, 5. The five-year range of PE is 2 to 7. Return on equity is very high at 49%. You say, wow, that's a really good number. And they're paying a 3.1% dividend. Boy, this looks good. It's a value trap, in my opinion. The sales have been shrinking slowly every year, every quarter for, you know, what, 8 quarters in a row. And think about, remember the book I've talked to you often about called Creative Destruction? Creative Destruction. R.R. Donnelly and Sons is the Yellow Pages, right? Okay, and they're trying to migrate to the internet age, but they're still dominated by printed material, direct mail, financial printing, printing fulfillment, and other print services to various industries. And not printing is not necessarily going away, but it's shrinking and shrinking and shrinking to in face of the internet, right? Internet, video, video conferencing, video information, video classes, you name it, it's all video, and that does not help this company. Therefore, I don't think of it as cheap. Think of it as a company that looks like it could shrink further. And therefore, it's not a cheap stock. I wouldn't buy the stock. It has no attraction for me at all. So I wouldn't do RRD, RR Donnelly and Sons. Let's go to Bill in Hayward. How you doing, Bill?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I've got a fairly well-diversified portfolio, and I'm just looking for a little more income and maybe willing to speculate a little bit. And I wanted to see what if you had an opinion on Frontier Communications with that big dividend yield that they're sporting right now.
Okay, yeah, about 12% or so. Frontier Communications, everybody, it's out of Norwalk, Connecticut, provides local exchange, long-distance internet network access, and data services to rural communities in 28 states. The problem you have here, this stock has fallen hard from, what, $8 a year ago down to $3.39 because it's going to lose money this year and then lose more money next year. 10 cents a share this year and 16 cents last year. And it's been going in the wrong direction now for 4, 5, 6 years in a row. I mean, in 2012, it made 26 cents, 13 made 24 cents, 2014, 19, 2015, 13, 2016, lose 10 cents, 2017, lose 16. So that's in face of sales going up. Now you say, what the heck? Why are sales going up and earnings going down? Now, that's, Bill, that's the question we have to answer. Maybe they'll turn around because it's always a good positive sign with sales growing that the company should do well. But they have a huge debt. That's one of your problems. Maybe they bought somebody. You know, that could be an issue. And, you know, they're swallowing a somebody and it's not working out so well. This is one that you can roll the dice on because sales are going up. You know, you could take a shot, but it's high risk, Bill. And don't expect the dividend to, they have great cash flow, so they might be able to maintain a high dividend, but I don't think it's going to stay at 12%. Okay? Did I lose you, Bill? I lost
No,
Bill?
I'm still here. I appreciate the comments. I'll take it under advisement and see how I feel and maybe roll the dice.
Yeah, don't think of it as a big blue chip stock that has, you know, not too much risk. Think of it as a high dividend paying stock that has quite a bit of risk. Okay.
Right. Great.
Thanks, Steve. Bill. Appreciate the call. Let's go to John in Santa Cruz. How you doing, John?
Hi, Steve. Better. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Oh, sure. I have a question about Royal Dutch Shell Class A shares.
Okay.
I wondered if you think it's a good long-term hold.
Royal Dutch shares, RD, what is it? RDS?
RDS.
Dot A?
Yeah, RDS.A.
Yeah, let's see if I can find it. RDS/A, maybe it's under that. No. I know Royal Dutch Shell, but it's not. That's not coming up.
It's not coming up.
Well, I know the company fairly well, and if you're asking me if it is a, you know, if it is a solid company, my answer is yes. Is it going to be able to maintain the dividend? My answer would probably be yes. So I do think it has it's strong enough, and I think oil is going to stay where it is. Not necessarily go up much, not going to go down much, just to kind of stay in that area where it is. Therefore, Royal Dutch Shell should be able to maintain what they're doing.
Okay.
But I can't
Great.
Give you much
Thanks
more
to
details.
You.
Appreciate the call, John. Thank you. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We haven't talked about the main talking point today. And that is, experts are often wrong. 2016 was a very bad year for these experts. They were totally wrong. And is 2017 going to be much different? Now, why do I say that? Because of statistics. Let's look at it. You don't have to be, You don't have to be a genius. You just have to look at the numbers. How many of the mutual funds, stock mutual funds that were in the market beat their indexes? It's like 1 in 5. 1 in 5 large cap active manager companies, 19%, produce returns that beat their index. In this case, those would be the Russell 1000 market index. I mean, the average fund has an 8.4% return for the full year. The index rose 9. Now, the question is, and the reason that they missed underperformance, because they picked the wrong stocks. They picked the wrong stocks. And this is common. My biggest complaint is that they have, one of the things they do that I think is totally wrong is they follow follow the leaders. If someone thinks it's a good stock, they all jump on the bandwagon and say, oh, it's a good stock. Instead of, you know, remember the dogs of the Dow theory? Instead of looking at big blue chip stocks that are really suffering, this in 1 year, usually those same big blue chip stocks do well the following year or two. They don't do it that way. They look at the big blue chip stocks that did well this year and rate them all highly, and then buy them and hold them for the next year, when they should be looking at the ones that underperformed. Now, I'm talking about the big blue chip stocks, people. Big blue chip stocks. It's routine that they come in favor and go out of favor. It's routine that you have sector rotation. It's routine. And a lot of these analysts, they're all patting each other's on the back, all giving themselves high fives and all buying the same thing. That's why they're wrong so often. So that's why I think you, as individual investors, can do much better. You can take your own path. You can think independently. And this is why I tell you, don't listen to stock tips. Don't buy those stocks that are on the top 10 list of somebody's. Don't buy stocks that are on that are the best performers last year, so you're going to buy them this year. No, do just the opposite of that. Go buy the big blue chip stocks that did bad last year and buy those for this year. You do. Every study that's out there says you will do a lot better if you manage your money that way. And if you want to be real strict about it, go do the Dogs of the Dow strategy. Dogs of the Dow. Oh, okay. Let's go to John. Am I missing something? Okay, hold on. You listen to Invest Talk, everybody. Our last segment of the hour is coming up, but we still can fit you in. Mike is on hold in San Jose. So, Mike, hold on. We'll get to you. Then we'll talk to you at 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike? Mike, are you there? Did we lose Mike? Mike! I guess we lost Mike. He wanted to talk about Caruso Oil and Gas. Okay, so I guess we lost Mike also. Okay, a plan to save and at various ages. How much money should you have? Okay, I'm going to give you some goals here. This is about goals. When you're in your 20s, you need to save at least 20% of your money, and whether 401k, IRA, or just plain old savings. If you save more earlier, you'll be a lot further along later. So save as much as you can early. Of course, no 20-year-old or 20s, a person's in their 20s are going to do that. I very rarely come across someone like that. But that's what you should do. When you're 30 years old, you should have at least 1 year of salary saved. And every 5 years after that, 35, you should have 2 times saved. 40, 3 times your annual salary saved. 45, 4 times. 50, 5 times. 55, 6. 67, 65, 8 times your annual salary. Now, your annual salary is going to go up. Hopefully, that's the hope. Annual salary will go up, and therefore, you'll be saving more and more money. If you can do that, then with the power of compounding over all those years, you'll have a very comfortable retirement. So that's what's the goals, the very achievable goals. I don't know why you couldn't do it. You could. So, okay, Mike wanted to talk about Carruzo Oil and Gas, and since I already pulled up all the information and looked at it, I thought I would go over it anyways. It's a $2.1 billion company engaged in exploration, production, transportation of oil and natural gas in the United States. Late last year, they acquired Eagle Ford Shale for $181 million in cash. They're going to make $1.59 this year after making $1.14 per share last year. And next year, they're going to make $2.62. So that's up 40% this year, up another 65% next year. And sales were falling for several quarters. The last two quarters, in September quarter, sales grew 5%. And this most recent quarter, sales grew 45%. Now, that might have been from acquisitions. But that $2.62 per share earnings is going to drive the P.E. ratio down to 13. And the five-year range is 11 to 47. The only danger you have, and it has a very high cash flow of $6.10, and the only danger you have is that it has a lot of debt, and maybe that cash flow can support that debt. Okay, but that's the thing that you have to look for if you're thinking about buying this stock. It has come to a triple bottom in the last year. And hopefully, if it holds this bottom, starts to rise, which it looks like it's trying to do, that triple bottom's right around $32 or so, 33, 32. It's right now 33. The stock 33.03 right now. So if it holds this bottom, then it'd probably be a good time to buy. Here's an investment term for you should know. What is a buyback? We talk about buybacks, but do you really know what it is? A buyback is also known as a repurchase. Repurchase. It is the purchase by a company of its own outstanding shares. And why do they do that? They want to reduce the share number of shares that are traded out there. And what does that do? It makes the earnings per share go up, even though the sales may and earnings have not gone up. But they always divide the number of shares into the earnings, so that earnings will look like it's going up. Okay, so it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And, you know, what it does, a lot of times companies will do that because they have no better use for their money. Maybe they already built a new factory. Maybe they don't want to spend money and buy some other competitor. And maybe, you know, they already pay a high dividend, don't want them. Do that. They want to, you know, increase shareholder value, and buying back their own stocks will do that. It also changes the P/E ratio. Okay, because the E is earnings per share, and if you have less shares out there, divide the earnings into, you're going to have a higher E. P/E ratio, price to earnings ratio. Our time's up for this hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve. And InvestTalk.com, and InvestTalk.com. That's an email that comes directly to me. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thanks for being with me today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.